for those who know every line, and for those finding Star Wars for the very first time, welcome to Growing Up Skywalker.
Welcome to Growing Up Skywalker. I'm Sam.
Hi, I'm Anna.
And today we're covering some of my favorite episodes of Rebels, Season 2, Episode 7, Wings of the Master, and Season 2, Episode 8, Blood Sisters. So, Season 2, Episode 7, Wings of the Master, definitely one of my favorites because it's a starship episode. We begin and the ghost crew is trying to break a blockade around the planet Ibar. And they just cannot get past. It turns out that Callus is sitting there, and it's almost as if it's a trap. But they can't get through. One of the blockade runners blows up. Hera pulls back, and they don't know what to do. So Rex says, on the planet Shantipole, there exists a crazy spacecraft designer who's designed a blockade buster. His name is Quarry, but he will only give this blockade buster to a pilot who visits him in person. And the planet Shantipole is, in fact, haunted.
It's, quote unquote, it's a one-way trip.
So they split up. Ezra and Kanan are in the Ghost, and they're still part of the convoy. But the rest of the Ghost crew heads down to the planet Shantipole. And as they're descending to the planet, Hera gleefully explains that the reason it's a one-way trip is because something in the atmosphere completely fries the electronics of all ships entering. So it's not so much a landing as an aiming. They land on a landing strip that's the size of like 1.5 pickleball courts, at which point the Phantom is teetering over the edge and Zeb, being 350 pounds of smell and muscle, has to like balance himself backwards to get the ship back. There, they meet Quarry, who is a diminutive Mon Calamari, and he shows off his new ship, the Blade Wing. It is bright red. It is long and lean, and the cockpit's at one side, and then there's another cockpit at the other side. But he's not willing to let just anyone fly it. But he is willing to help Hera fix the Phantom so they can go home.
Yeah, so she basically shows up, and it's kind of like when you apply to a job and they give you an assignment as part of your interview process. Mm-hmm. And Hera crash landing the Phantom should have qualified her to fly this Blade Wing. And Quarry is like, joke's on you. I don't think you're good enough. Get out of here. Scram.
So Hera actually takes that in stride and then talks about what type of pilot she is and why she became a pilot. And it is so inspiring that Quarry, in fact, does let her fly the Blade Wing. And in a very comical scene, she's booted up. She's ready to go. She gets the thumbs up. And Sabine and Zeb are like, so how many times have you flown this thing? He's like, fly. I don't fly. Better to be down here wishing I was up there than up there wishing I was down here. Hera takes off and the Blade Wing immediately plummets off these massive pillars that are shrouded in mist, which is the planet Shantipole, into the mist. But then she comes zooming straight back up, and we watch a scene that makes me cry every single time as she flies this B-wing around, this bright red Blade Wing. She unfurls the wings and starts shooting. She asks for more firepower, and a massive collimated beam comes out of all four of the ends, and boom! It is beautiful. And she lands, and then Quarry's like, I never liked the paint scheme. There's so much I need to do. Sabine's like, never get between a Mandalorian and a weapon system. I have so much to do here to make this deadlier. And also, it doesn't have a hyperdrive.
But also, Kanan calls in, and the people on Ibar are officially starving. They're out of time.
So Kanan and Ezra are starting the blockade run, and the B-Wing can't fly. Well, it can fly, but it can't go to hyperspace. So they come up with a plan, and as Kanan and Ezra are flying in, and Kanan's like, I literally have so little idea of what I'm doing. She's the pilot. I just know how to drive. They're going in. The ghost is actually carrying the cargo, and it is immediately recognized by Callus, and he's like, fire on the ghost.
Oh, I hate that he knows their ship's name.
So they're starting to get battered when the Phantom rolls in. The Phantom has a working hyperdrive. Corey installed it, and it's docked to the Bladewing. So they unleash the Bladewing. It flies behind this crew of blockade runners. Hera says, you boys better give me some room. She muscles her way through. Sabine's at the other end. They fly super close to one of the cruisers, and then the massive beam comes out of it and slices this cruiser clean in half.
And Callus is looking through the window, and he's like, that's impossible.
He's not having a good day. They feed the people of Ibar. They fly off under a hail of TIE fighters, and everyone escapes. Quarry is given the project. They're like, we found a planet and a bunch of engineers and a bunch of parts. You're going to be manufacturing these things. And Hera is given a promotion to Phoenix leader. So that ends Wings of the Master, a nice little episode about Hera. And the next one, Blood Sisters, begins.
Before we move into Blood Sisters, I do want to add that Sam and I watched these two episodes together, which is kind of unusual. Normally we watch it in separate rooms. And I did look over at the end of Wings of the Master, and both of us had tears and snot just mingling on our faces.
It's a really beautiful, uplifting episode, especially if you're a fan of Starfighters.
It's a stunning episode. It is so good to see Hera getting the recognition she deserves. So we move from the spotlight on Hera to putting a spotlight on Sabine in Blood Sisters. So now that Hera has been promoted to general and Phoenix leader, she starts sending people out on missions. And she sends Sabine on her own mission, and then as an afterthought is like, okay, Ezra and Chopper, you can go too. You need to go pick up a courier from the airport on Garel and then take him to Havoc Station. He's full of secrets. So, Ezra is useful for one thing and one thing only this episode. He is walking around the spaceport giving out the secret passcode that they're supposed to use to connect with the spy to everyone. And then he sits on a gonk droid and says it out loud. And then the gonk droid wakes up and does the tippy taps because he's their spy.
That's how they talk.
However, Sabine noticed a really weird and familiar piece of graffiti outside the hangar, and it turns out that her former best friend, infamous Black Sun bounty hunter Ketsu Onyo, is also here for the droid. We get a little bit of backstory. Ketsu and Sabine broke out of the Imperial Academy together and were like running across the galaxy being cool bounty hunters. And then Ketsu left Sabine for dead. And so, now in the words of T-Swift, they got bad blood.
Bad blood sisters.
They're not subtle about this confrontation. A bunch of stormtroopers roll in. Sabine immediately loses Ezra. He's just down for the count. She hustles Chopper onto the janky Garel transport ship that takes people from planet to planet.
Which they've hijacked,
impressively. And she's trying to get them to hyperspace. But Ketsu hops into the Shadowcaster, which is her ship, and she is hot on their tail. And then they have a standoff in outer space. Ketsu shoots out Sabine's hyperdrive, and it's looking very, very bad. She blows off their door. Everyone is getting sucked into the galaxy, alien style. But Chopper activates his rocket boots and flies over to her ship and disables her weapons array.
He just starts sawing open panels and pulling wires. Like, does this look important? This looks important.
And it's just like a tennis match. They keep one-upping each other because then Ketsu grabs Chopper in the tractor beam. And so then they have to have a hostage exchange.
One droid for another.
They meld their, what are those? Their
docking ports.
They meld their docking ports together in the middle of outer space, and they're about to do the hostage exchange. However, then the Empire shows up to arrest them for stealing the Garel courier ship, and now they're on the same side. So they have Chopper hack into the controls on the Gorel ship to make it seem like the shuttle is about to self-destruct. And then Sabine loads it up with all of Ketsu's explosives. And then they wake up the shuttle captain and they're like, "Captain, you're under attack. Go fight that Imperial patrol that is about to do the murder to you." And so the captain races the Gorel ship towards the Imperial ship, and Sabine and Chopper are racing over to the Shadowcaster, but Sabine gets knocked out.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of leaving her for dead, Ketsu rescues her. And then the shuttle makes it right within firing distance of the Imperial shuttle, and Sabine blows it up.
And then they fly off into the sunset.
They deliver the Gonk droid right to Alderaan, where Bail Organa and R2-D2 are waiting for it. And then Ketsu drops Sabine off at home, where Hera and Ezra are waiting on her. And before she goes, Sabine is like, "You could have left me for dead and just bounced. What gives?" And Ketsu says, "I really missed having someone have my back. I haven't had that since we were friends." And then she says she will think about joining the rebellion in the future.
Da-da, da
da da da da da da da.
So that's two fun episodes. They're both a little fillery. We're not moving along the plot in a big way, but we are learning a lot about the backstories of individual characters.
Oh, I mean, okay. I think Blood Sisters was more action, less substance. I thought Wings of the Master was one of the most masterful, if not the most masterful, Rebels episode we've ever seen.
Well, absolutely. So first of all, there are so many fun callbacks and little Easter eggs in Wings of the Master. Quarry is named after Ralph McQuarrie, who did all the original art for Star Wars.
He's sort of the legendary granddaddy, Mac Daddy concept artist.
Oh, yeah. He's like, X-Wings, sounds great. I'll invent that. Y-Wings, I'll invent that. And so having the designer of the B-Wing be named after him is a nice little one. The whole concept of the B-Wing is interesting. And the Rebels Recon, and then later on in the Rebels universe, we'll see that these different Rebel cells have different sets of fighters.
Mm.
And so the Phoenix cell, which we've seen flying all this season, has had a lot of A-wings. And they lose a lot of A-wings, but they have a lot of A-wings. And now we get to see B-wings. In the original trilogy, we didn't see those until Return of the Jedi. So what we're seeing is this cell, the Phoenix cell, is just different, and they have different tools available, and they have a very different thing going on, and it really makes the rebellion seem larger to have these different cells. So you don't know just because an X-Wing is showing up that it's a rebel X-Wing. It could be anything, but you do know when you got like blockade runners and the Ghost, because the Ghost is just a VCX-100. It's just a cargo hauler. You never know what the Rebellion's going to show up with, especially when they show up with a experimental B-Wing that carves a cruiser in half. Like, what the heck just happened? I love it.
Well, and also the fact that Hera gets a promotion in this episode, I think speaks to how much more organized we're seeing the Rebellion become. I think this is the first promotion we've ever seen for the Rebels.
It definitely is. The Phoenix leader had died in the initial attack, so we've been losing a lot of A-Wings, especially in Siege of Lothal when Darth Vader shoots down a full handful of them. And so giving the reins of the flight wing of Phoenix Cell to Hera really makes a lot of sense, and she's definitely proven herself as a pilot. And that is also what is echoed in this episode, is she has to not just prove that she's capable of being a pilot, but she has to prove that she's a truly gifted individual pilot. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I think that brings up one of the interesting, complicated feelings I had about this episode. So on the one hand, Wings of the Master is a swan song to Hera. It's amazing, right? Mm-hmm. Hera is showing off every skill in her arsenal, and it's her emotional depth and her history and her backstory and her very identity that convinces Corey to allow her to fly the B-Wing. So on the one hand, it is amazing to see Hera get to be not just the mom that drives the minivan, but also like the cool hotshot that drives the race car and like gets the promotion.
Yeah.
And all of the credit. I mean, that is amazing. But on the other hand, I also found myself frustrated by the fact that Hera drops down on Shantipole and does an incredible powerless descent and lands them right smack dab in the middle of this teeny tiny landing pad. And Zeb puts one toe on the wrong side of the Phantom, and they're about to go careening to their deaths, and Hera saves them.
Yep.
And I'm like, that should be enough to convince Corey that she's ready to fly the B-Wing. And instead, she has to, like, throw every piece of ammunition and credibility at him. And that felt a little gross.
Yeah, the whole prove yourself in order to fulfill the quest trope, but also particularly because there's a possibility of the fact that she's a woman and that's something that she has to do to prove herself. My initial, I guess, more generous take on this is that Corey knows that there are ace pilots out there. There's really, really skilled pilots. Mm-hmm. And then there's people who are uncomfortable out of the cockpit, who were born to fly, who know the ins and outs of everything. You put them in any cockpit and they'll make the thing sing. And I think he wanted to be convinced of that. He wanted to be convinced that it's not just a desperate mission, because he wasn't that much of a roadblock. As soon as he said, like, why do you want to fly? What makes you fly? And she told him, he's like, all right, well, this thing's not going to fly itself.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it's a 22-minute episode, so it doesn't take that long in the episode. But I was thinking about all of the other truly gifted natural pilots we've seen so far chronologically. Mm-hmm. So we've seen 9-year-old Anakin Skywalker with the pod racer.
Yeah.
Who basically just has to say, yeah, I'm a great pilot. I'm going to fly this pod racer. And everyone, including Qui-Gon and his mom, lets him. Mm-hmm. And even Cassian Andor, in some of the early episodes of Andor, basically just has to say, I'm a great pilot. I can fly anything, including this cargo shuttle on Aldani that we don't know anything about. Like, whatever it is, I can fly it. And people are like, okay, cool. Get at it. And so the fact that it is the only awesome female pilot we know that has to sort of bare her soul and really convince people of her mettle, that just, it stuck out to me just because we know Hera's incredible. And Corey doesn't know. I mean, he's only seen a glimpse of how incredible Hera is.
Yeah. And that glimpse is enough that at the end, the real tearjerker is, everyone's like, Corey, you made such a great fighter. Thanks for breaking the blockade. And he says, no, it was Hera. I hammered it together. She made it soar.
Well, okay, now you're making me tear up. That is very, very good.
And that is what ended up happening. I think there's a little bit of grace to be given to Corey for sitting there alone with an R2 unit on a tennis court-sized mesa above the mists of Shantipole, surrounded by broken starfighters as he's hammering something together. So he's a little nutty. But also, if he had given it to, say, Anakin.
Uh-huh.
Peak Anakin, Clone Wars. There's like a 90... Okay, just kidding. There's a 100% chance that Anakin would have crashed it.
Really?
Anakin has crashed
110% of the ships that he's ever had access to, including some that he really shouldn't have.
Ironically, Darth Vader has crashed so many fewer ships than Anakin has. Like, Darth Vader's got, like, his TIE fighter, and he keeps living to fight another day, whereas Anakin is like, yep, look at these Jedi starfighters. I just buy them in bulk.
Wartime military-industrial budgets, honey.
And so there's something to be said, perhaps, for Quarry's desire not just for recognition, because I think he does desire the recognition for the ship coming together. And that's actually Sabine's role in this episode, when she has just a few lines, but one of them is never get between a Mandalorian and a weapons system. And he's like, all right, fair. I understand that now that I have succeeded, now that my pet project has become a group project, because I have a pilot because I don't fly, and I have a weapons systems operator because it functions, but, you know, a Mandalorian would make this thing real deadly. Now I can do something different. It's like this has been his project for a long time, and he's ready to move into the next phase, but he needs some sort of catharsis. And Hera was able to bring him that catharsis.
That is really beautiful. Can you talk to me about, like, what's so amazing about the B-Wing? Because I see it, it's a beautiful ship. It seems cool. I don't think I caught all of the nuance.
So, okay, this bugs me.
What, the B-Wing?
So, way back in the 80s.
Okay, way back in our time.
In
Star Wars
time. So, in the Prime Universe in the 80s, we first see the B-Wings and the A-Wings in Return of the Jedi, and they slay. They're great. In A New Hope, we see a bunch of X-Wings and Y-Wings. And then in Return of the Jedi, we see a bunch of A-Wings, B-Wings, X-Wings, and Y-Wings. And everyone was like, oh, the B-Wing's like this slow, tanky thing. And I'm like, okay, I don't love that. Like, why would you make a starfighter that's slow at all? It's got four big engines like an X-Wing.
To be fair, it doesn't look like it would be fast.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why it gets the reputation for being slow. And also, that said, I was up late last night because it was New Year's Eve, so I could stay up extra late. And I was looking at all of the different World War II planes and why some of them were like better in certain theaters than others. Like the Japanese Zero would have been just really actually bad in the European theater, but it was fantastic in the Pacific theater because it had different traits. But so the B-Wing, heavily armed, decently armored, and the main thing is, It's got this T cross-shaped, and at one tip of it is the cockpit, and then when it releases its X-foils, it's shaped like a cross, and it's got guns at the point of every other one, and then sort of in the middle of the center of mass is the engines. It is heavily armed, but it's generally considered to be slow and unmaneuverable, but because it has this gyroscopic thing, because the cockpit can stay in place and the whole wing system can rotate around it.
Okay. So B-Wing. So if you picture a lowercase b, there's like a really long shaft for the B, and then the actual bubble of the B is the cockpit, and then the long shaft like rotates around the cockpit?
Yes.
Okay, so the pilot is always in the same place, but Hera can, like, rotate the wing around herself?
Yeah.
That slays.
It does, because if you're coming up against, like, 963 TIE fighters, then you're just, like, go full Star Blossom mode and spin the thing around and just blenderize and send out a huge wave of lasers. Or you use the fact that it's got really heavily, like, really heavy blasters to fly in and blow up some cruisers, just shoot them in the engines, like do some sort of blockade busting, because the Empire can't afford to have Star Destroyers around everything. And I think we really see that in Rebels. There's a lot of little Articans class cruisers and Gazantes.
TIE fighters.
And yeah, TIE fighters, as opposed to a Star Destroyer rolls up with 144 starfighters. We did see at the season one finale, three full Star Destroyers with all of their hundreds of TIE fighters. But that's actually a really big investment, especially when, like, from Kallus's point of view, Admiral Constantine probably runs like a sector fleet, and ISB agent Kallus is like, I'm tracking down one rebel cell. What can you give me? And they're like, I don't know, like three cruisers, like set up a base and have set up a trap and have like the rebels try to come to you. Because space is big, rebels are sneaky, and Star Destroyers are expensive. So if the B-Wing can shred something like that, then it's doing great. It compares similarly to the Y-Wing also as a sort of fighter bomber. Whereas the A-Wing is an interceptor, it's super fast, and the X-Wing is the all-rounder.
It's kind of funny. I keep thinking about these threads that are connecting Andor to Rebels, And one of the really strong ones that I noticed this episode, and it's related to ships kind of tangentially, but it's the fact that Callus sets up this blockade in order to draw in the rebels. And it's not the fact that it's just a bunch of Imperial ships floating there. Mm-hmm. He is intentionally starving the people of Ibar to draw in the rebels to hopefully destroy them once and for all.
Yeah.
And that felt very Ferrix to me. And honestly, it reminded me, it was very Kenobi as well. It's like when Darth Vader marches on the innocent townspeople and starts snapping necks left and right to mm-hmm. draw Kenobi out. And when the Imperial garrison was cracking down on Ferrix right in the wake or right as they're planning Marva's funeral.
Yeah.
It just felt very pointed and they didn't harp on it in this episode, but I thought it was a really beautiful continuation of how the Empire will use any tools at their disposal, whether they are ships or Star Destroyers or innocent townspeople, to draw the rebels towards them. And so the burden is on the rebels and now on Hera to outsmart them and outmaneuver them.
And outfight them.
And outfight them.
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, the Imperial propaganda will say, you know, rebels are bringing whatever into your towns, and so we need to protect you. We're protecting you from these rebels who are going to just come raid you.
Ugh.
And in reality, the rebels are the ones who are trying to deliver food so the people don't starve.
Yeah. So that's maddening, obviously. Hate that.
Yeah.
Hundo P. But one really cool thing that I noticed in these episodes is that everywhere the rebels touch, it feels like they light up more rebel cells in their wake. I think we saw that with the people on Ibar in Wings of the Master. And then we also saw it with Corey, who wasn't, you know, a rebel.
Yeah.
But now his design is going to be manufactured for the rebellion. And we saw it with Ketsu Onyo too.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about Blood Sisters, because I think that's really interesting that she is rebel curious.
Yeah. Are you questioning your rebellious nature?
Yeah. Do you want to? I mean, I love that she's way more willing to shoot stormtroopers than Sabine. We start off and like they're having a standoff at the OK Corral. Sabine has got her hand about to touch her blaster. Ketsu's got hers about to touch her blaster. And then the stormtroopers show up.
And they both whirl on the stormtroopers.
And Ketsu's like, I don't have time for this. I'm going to kill a bunch of stormtroopers.
Well, she's like, how dare you interrupt us? And I'm like, that is so cool. Lord, give me the confidence.
Most people are like, Cheez-It, it's the cops. And she's like, I am busy, officer. Remove yourself.
So good. Yeah. Talking about Ketsu, woman of color,
mm-hmm.
cool mohawk, cool head tattoos, cool yeah. armor.
Cool vibes.
Yeah. Saucy vibes.
Yeah. And we don't get, I don't know, this episode, it's tough to suss out like what the relationship is. And maybe it's because I've never been a teenage girl, but it feels like these are two late teens, early 20s women talking to each other in this way where Sabine is trying to get Ketsu to remember a deeper side of her nature, like a kinder, more trusting side of her nature. And the moment of catharsis comes when Sabine forgives Ketsu for leaving her behind.
Mm. So let's talk about what we can piece together about their backstory.
Yeah.
We know that Sabine was a cadet on Mandalore in the Imperial Academy.
Mm-hmm.
We know that Sabine and Ketsu broke each other out.
Yep.
Or they broke out together. I guess for some reason, I had kind of thought that Sabine maybe had infiltrated the Imperial Academy as a spy to learn all of their secrets. But now it feels like Sabine and Ketsu were trapped in the Imperial Academy.
Maybe not trapped so much as they signed up for it and then realized that they didn't want to be Imperial whatevers.
So you think you have to sign up for Imperial Academy?
Well, we saw that Ezra could get into it as a baby stormtrooper. Uh-huh. I think that Sabine was probably asked to be at a higher level to be doing you know, I don't know if it was piloting or weapons design or something mm-hmm. like that, but, you know, she was there at the military college with Ketsu, and then they're looking at their career prospects, and it's like being an officer on a Star Destroyer, being an officer on a Star Destroyer, being an officer on Secret Project Stardust, being an officer on Secret Project Doomslayer. Like, you're part of all these things, and you don't get to be free.
Mm-hmm.
And so Sabine and Ketsu sprung each other, and maybe others. And I think that's interesting because it seems like perhaps Ketsu wanted to just be a bounty hunter and Sabine was going along or something.
Yeah, Sabine says that she's like, it's so interesting. You finally joined the Black Sun just like we always dreamed of doing. Mm-hmm. I always wanted to be part of the Black Sun too. Then I grew up and I realized that they are just mercenaries. They're bloodthirsty. They have no loyalty.
Yeah, I wonder if they reached a point where they had, like, done a bounty hunting job and they watch as, like, their handler executes the prisoner in front of them or something. And Ketsu's like, yep, this is what I signed up for. And Sabine's like, I didn't sign up for this. I signed up for excitement and freedom and the open skies. I did not sign up for just killing people. Because we've seen the Black Sun and they're bad people.
They're not as bad as the Pikes. But, and I say that because you know what I'm thinking of is the Martez sisters arc.
Yes.
This is a very Rafa Trace vibe.
A little bit, yeah.
Ketsu is Rafa. She's the older, scruples-less sister.
Mm-hmm.
And Sabine is Trace. She's the younger, more soft and kind, idealistic one.
Who's also a mechanical wizard.
Yeah, and they both feel... So it reminds me of when Ahsoka rolled into the Martez sisters gang and was mm-hmm. so, so lost.
Mm.
And Trace was lost in that dynamic too. And together they kind of charted a course forward that felt better than what Rafa was doing.
Yeah.
It feels like Sabine was very, very lost when she was a bounty hunter with Ketsu, was left for dead, found the Spectres, joined the rebellion, found a new purpose and a mission,
mm-hmm.
and is no longer lost.
And that is what she is trying to bring Ketsu to.
Yeah. It's like in Star Wars, your family gives you purpose. Mm. But if you don't choose your family wisely, you are not going to have a purpose that is aligned with your core values.
Because the other side of Star Wars is your family, your blood family really matters and your chosen family really matters.
Yeah.
So if you've got a good blood family, stay with it. But if you've got a bad blood family, you should do something different.
Yeah, which is why you do not sign up to be a pirate with Hondo Ohnaka.
Yeah, and that actually leads right into the title of the episode, right? As blood sisters, that they have charted a bloody path together. And now, maybe however many years later, they're comparing notes. And Sabine's like, I actually have a really nice life. Ketsu actually calls her out on it. She says, I've seen the bounty on your head. And Sabine's like, yeah, it's fun. This is way more fun being bounty hunted than bounty hunter. So,
oh, spicy take.
Yeah. And so I think more than that, she wants Ketsu to be friends again. And that's an interesting ask.
Yeah, I mean, the vibe that I got from them is that they used to probably share share a cabin.
They're in a stolen TIE fighter together for 6 weeks or something. Who knows?
Yeah, absolutely. And they knew all of each other's secrets and they had the same hopes and dreams. And then something irrevocably broke,
mm-hmm.
which is that Ketsu left Sabine for dead,
yeah,
which is a huge breach of trust.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they're enemies and they're trying to find their way back to each other. And the only way they can do it is by seeing the old familiar pieces of each other that they used to trust and love and move past those ugly things that got in the way.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's definitely the direction they're going. And I think that the way that the dialogue goes supports that as well. Ezra is like a goofball, you know, he's the laugh track for this episode.
Yeah.
But they immediately get back into conversations And there's not like exposition.
Yeah. Well, it's like when you see your best friend who lives across the country again in person and you just fall right back into step.
Yeah. Yeah. Over this holiday season, I saw a friend who has been my friend for 30 years and I'm not 40 and have been friends with this guy for 30 years. And we immediately fell back into it. And it was just like that. Like the details don't matter because it's all about the patter and the pattern. It's, you know this person more than you know what they've been up to in their life. And so then you can look at their life choices and be like, is this true to you?
Mm. Yeah, these episodes were about the power of being known.
Mm.
Because it's only when, going back to Wings of the Master, it's only when Corey sees Hera's soul and her spirit and her talent and her history that he says, you are worthy of flying the B-Wing.
Mm-hmm.
And Ketsu and Sabine know each other and keep anticipating each other's moves. And so they can't get ahead until they eventually figure out a way to work together again. And then all of the knowledge that they have of each other serves to make them an incredible team.
Yeah.
Because they know each other. And Sabine is calling Ketsu back to the person she used to be by saying, this bounty hunting thing is not you. Leaving me for dead was not you.
Yeah.
Come back to you.
Yeah.
And that's what makes Ketsu rebel curious.
Mm-hmm. And that's what leads us at the end of these two arcs to have Quarry, a renowned starship designer, be part of the rebellion, and Ketsu be rebel curious, and Hera being promoted.
Yeah.
So we've really made the rebellion stronger through selective application of violence and friendship.
Dip your toe into the pool of possibilities with the rebellion. One thing that I was curious about is that this episode of Rebels would have come out before Bad Batch. So correct. The way that we're watching Star Wars, we met baby Hera in Bad Batch.
Yes.
And in Rebels, the backstory that we get is that Hera lived through the Clone War, wanted to be a pilot, finally left her family and her planet to fly for the rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
Does that track with her Bad Batch backstory?
Yes, because so that means that right about now she's mid-20s.
Mm-hmm.
Because at around about the Bad Batch, she's 7 or 8, maybe.
And so Bad Batch is after the Clone War.
It is, but maybe it's tough to tell because I feel like the Bad Batch actually takes place over a significant period of time.
Oh, interesting.
But she's 7 or 8, right? So she lived through the Clone Wars. She saw we know that her father is Sham Syndulla, so.
But we didn't see Hera in the Clone Wars TV show.
No.
Okay. I'm thinking back to the Ryloth arc in season 1, and I think we met Nuna?
Yes.
Okay. So we met a tiny baby green Twi'lek.
Who's
but,
not Hera.
But it was not Hera. Okay, got it.
And we probably saw Hera playing in the background when Mace and Sham Syndulla are partying or something.
Okay.
But then in Bad Batch, we see her flying and learning. You know, she's talking about how much she loves to fly from Omega. And Omega's like, I can't fly until I read the whole tech manual.
And Hera's like, I've actually never been allowed to fly. I just know I'll be great at it.
Which is lovely.
It is lovely. And then she is.
And then she is. And also, you know, the rebellion didn't really. So even at the beginning of Rebels, it's not like they're in a rebellion, right? Like Hera has contacts. And so at the beginning of Rebels, we have Kanan and Hera. Kanan is like, I know some arms dealers, I know some smugglers, and we will do illegal jobs to keep food on the table. And Hera is like, and occasionally we'll take these other jobs that also pay well that I get from Fulcrum.
Mm-hmm.
So Hera has been connected to the rebellion, but I don't think they've been a full-on rebel cell.
No, they've been like subcontractors.
Yeah, they've been rebel curious until the end of season 1 when the Phoenix Cell shows up and now they're part of the Phoenix Cell. And at the end of this episode, Hera is Phoenix leader.
Yeah.
So she's moved up, but yeah, no, it all jives with her becoming a pilot and joining the rebellion early, because honestly, it's almost as if she's always been a rebel, you know?
I like that we're talking about this, because one of the major tensions at the start of season two is that, yeah, Hera was more than rebel curious. She was ready to go full on committed to the rebellion. And she was kind of the only one. Kanan and Ezra especially felt very, very reluctant to like fully become a formalized part of the rebellion. Kanan was really dragging his feet. He was like, we're going to do this one job and then go back to being scoundrels and scavengers and get out of this, right? And I was really unimpressed with Kanan in Wings of the Master until the very end of the episode. Because he like voluntells Hera to do this mission to Shantipole. And she's very upset. It's a very reckless thing to do. They need her at the blockade. She is not happy and he is not offering context. He just kind of shoves her out the back of the ghost and is like, okay, peace out, Girl Scout. See you when you're back, right?
Yeah.
And it felt very arrogant until the end of the episode when he realized that he's been setting her up for a promotion.
And also, being someone who is in the Force, he probably recognizes, or at least gets the feeling, that only the very best pilot can do this. It is possible, but it requires the very best pilot we have.
Right.
And I have faith that that is Hera.
And so that is lovely and amazing. And men, gentlemen in the world who love ladies of the world, you should do this for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's powerful. Kanan put Hera up for a promotion to general and then she got it.
Yeah.
On her own merits and also by virtue of Kanan like going to bat for her. So that's fantastic. And I think it is a subtle nod to Kanan agreeing that they're doing the right thing, being part of the rebellion, without him saying as much in so many words.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a little sideways way for him to do it, because he's like, all right, well, we were just subcontractors, and now Hera is Captain Syndulla, and I'm part of the rebellion by marriage now, as opposed to like... which neatly sidesteps the issue for him of like, do I join or do I not? And that's a difficult question for him, because last time the Jedi joined in a conflict, they all died.
Yeah.
So he has baggage to deal with there. And he gets the most delightful look at the end of Wings of the Master, because the B-Wing flies over the ghost and he just grins.
Oh.
And just Hera's line, all right, boys, give me some room. Like, oh my gosh.
Absolutely iconic. What I wish for most in the entire world is a chance to say that out loud and mean it.
Yeah. It's when someone, I mean, this is the kind of story that, like, if told in 1972, would be a whole bunch of like long haul truckers and like race car drivers. And then there's like the woman who shows up. All right, boys, give me some room. And then she zooms past in like a Lamborghini or something.
That's hot shot.
Yeah, that's what's going on. And it's great. Young. Oh, it is iconic.
Oh, fantastic. What else did you want to talk about with these episodes? I know this is one of your favorites.
Wings of the Master is one of my favorites just because we get that Rebels theme, the same as when Chopper rolls in at the end of the season one and he bursts the blockade. And then in this case, Hera bursts the blockade. And just this idea, because for me, so much of Star Wars is about the starfighters.
Mm.
When I was little, I wanted to be a fighter pilot. And then I got too tall and glasses and was born in a poor part of the country. And then all of these starfighters, you know, everyone loves the X-Wing. And I'm like, give me that B-Wing. Give me the A-Wing. They're much cooler, because Return of the Jedi I prefer to A New Hope. And so watching these cool starfighters, and as well as that, so much of the story of the A-Wings and the B-Wings is from Legends originally. And they're like, oh, you know, after episode four, they started manufacturing these in secret. And I think that the way Pablo Hidalgo and David Filoni put it together of, No, that doesn't really make sense. The design phase for a starfighter is years. And so you're not going to do it in the middle of a war. What you're going to do is have a whole bunch of different teams working in secret and pull them together. And that made this really cool. But the part that really gets me is watching Hera fly. Mm. And she's truly flying in this. And she doesn't get many opportunities to truly fly in like a fighter, you know?
I mean, yeah, she's the mom in the minivan. She's hauling the ghost around.
And she makes the ghost soar.
She outflew Darth Vader in his Darth Vader TIE fighter in the ghost.
And so imagine what she can do in a B-wing or an A-wing. And I'm excited to see that because we've opened up this whole new chapter of the rebellion. And that now, instead of being like Andor, where it's dozens, a scant handful of people running around with a blaster in their pocket, tensely talking in rooms and pulling heists, we're doing space battles. We're doing Star Wars stuff.
Yeah.
And Hera is like the tip of the spear.
And I also love the kind of implicit connection or the implicit contrast that this episode draws between the rebels and the imps, right? Because the rebels win when they send their most talented pilot to get an extremely cool prototype ship and then they let her loose. Mm-hmm. And it's her individuality and her freedom to be herself and to shine that allows her to outflank and outfly and smash the blockade of the Imperials. And the Imperials, for all of their standardization and cohesiveness and control, can't stand against one individual in their own power.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Sabine was saying to Ketsu too, right? And what Sabine was wanting from her life. Sabine didn't want to be another cog in the machine, and neither did Ketsu. So they both got out, and now Ketsu has turned back into another cog in the machine of the Black Sun.
I think that that's a really insightful thing, particularly because in the visuals of this, for the first half of the episode, Ketsu's wearing a helmet.
Yeah, you then, can't see her face.
And then she takes it off, and after that, she basically keeps it off, and we've got a completely different experience because now she is unique and humanized as opposed to just being a Black Sun bounty hunter.
Mm-hmm. And it is a mirror. It is a tiny slice of what the rebellion is fighting for. The rebellion is fighting for individuality and freedom and for people to be able to choose their own destiny and rise to their potential and own their own power.
Mm-hmm.
And the Empire is standing for facelessness and homogeny and flattening the galaxy and flattening people's lives.
Yeah.
I think that's really beautiful.
I think so too. Yeah, it's fun that we're moving along in this direction because so much of this season and so much of this particular second season of Rebels is about putting together the building blocks for who the characters are and learning who the Rebels are. We learned so much about them this season. We have so far and we will continue to do so. And it's not like we're doing a flashback backstory episode. We're doing a, here's how this person reacts in this situation. Here's how they change and here's how they evolve.
Mm.
And the evolution, the changing is the important part. The changing of Quarry's mind and the changing of Ketsu's mind are the most important parts of those episodes.
Yeah. We actually talked about this on the Patreon a couple weeks back, which is that the OG canon Clone Wars,
mm-hmm,
doesn't have much of an arc for Anakin because of the prequel era movies, his destiny is foretold.
Yes.
And there's only a limited amount that he can change in the animated Clone Wars TV show because we know where he started and we know where he has to end up.
Yeah.
Whereas Ahsoka and Obi-Wan get to have these more expansive arcs where they really grow and develop as characters.
Mm-hmm.
And Rebels doesn't seem to have any of that baggage.
No, no. Anything because, okay, so this is important. This episode came out in 2015, same year as The Force Awakens, the first of the sequel movies.
Oh.
And so actually, Ketsu's design was taken from an unused design in The Force Awakens because it's a movie and they add a billion side things. Also, her ship is taken from an unused original, the planned Clone Wars Season 7. It was supposed to be Asajj Ventress's ship.
Oh!
But, so 2015, this is coming out. And that means that everything that's come after The Force Awakens, which is all of like the Mandoverse era, the Mando era stuff.
Oh, all the new TV shows?
Is after this.
Okay.
And so we didn't see what happened to any of these characters. And it was a completely blank slate.
Oh.
Because we know that we've never seen any of these characters, except for like, I mean, R2-D2 shows up in Wings of the Master. We know he survives, but we don't know what happens to the Rebels crew. And that gives them room to do everything. But also the galaxy is a big place, and it makes sense to have all these crews all over pulling Rebel stuff. It's a space to be filled, and it's great because you can make a whole rogues gallery of Rebels just everywhere.
Yeah, and they can have as much character growth as you want, which is important, which I love.
And it sort of inverts the Star Wars silly thing where they're like, oh, this is the singer in the background of Jabba's Palace in Return of the Jedi. Size noodles, 70 pages of backstory.
Yes, good.
So in this, they're like, here's Rebels. And what that does is it frees up and says, okay, so if this crew is a Rebel crew, but it's not the only one, then there's room for every Rebel crew to exist. And that means that when you watch one of the movies and you see 50 pilots waiting to storm the Death Star, you're like, every single one of them has a backstory.
Oh.
And it could be something like, I got rescued by Hera. I knew Cham Syndulla. Or it's, I've never met them.
Can you imagine if everyone had their amusement park t-shirts on that was like, I got rescued by Harrison Dula and all I got this was this dumb t-shirt. Now I'm part of the rebellion.
Oh, man. When I read the X-Wing books just recently, I enjoyed that because Wedge is one of the main characters of that. And he's got to be one of those guys like, I blew up two Death Stars and I got this lousy t-shirt.
Oh, man. Well, on that note, are you ready to pick your bay of the week in Baywatch?
Baywatch. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Baywatch. Cha-cha.
It's time for Baywatch.
All right. Who is bay between Wings of the Master and Blood Sisters?
Oh, Sam. There are no surprises to be found this week.
Yeah?
I mean, this is a Hera week.
It is a Hera week.
Sabine is very, very good. She is a great warrior. She is a great strategist. I also think her arc was really, really well done in that on her first mission, she loses Ezra, she loses Chopper, she gets knocked out. It doesn't go perfectly because she's still young.
Yes.
And she wins, but she's not 100% masterful in her execution of the plan.
It was a little sloppy.
Whereas Hera just naturally owns her inherent power and skill and talent and confidence and never doubts herself and gets the dang thing done and inspires everyone around her to be as cool as her and join the rebellion. And she's just like a one-woman torch burning for the rebellion and lighting up everyone around her. And it doesn't look hard.
I love that characterization because I'm also going to choose Hera.
Yeah.
Which is like the difference between like a girl or a young woman moving into a woman in her prime is Sabine is able to inspire one person to deeply change their mind. And Hera does that as a matter of course and does it flawlessly and then uses that to kill a bunch of imps.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's like, all right, that was fun. Let's do dinner. Like,
yeah.
And so she does do it as a matter of course, and it makes it really compelling. It does feel like this is probably not the first time that someone's been like, you need to prove your worth before you can fly. And she's like, look, I've been flying since the Clone Wars. The Bad Batch taught me to fly. Gobi Glee and Cham Syndulla are my uncle and father. I know my way around killing Imperials, all right?
Like, I've been in this fight since I was 9 years old.
Yeah.
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 I love that too because my mantra lately has been, no one ever changed their mind because I told them to. Mm-hmm. And I think it's true that no one ever changed because you wanted them to or asked them to or told them to. People change because they see the way that you are and want to be like that. Mm-hmm. And then they change of their own volition, right?
Right.
So when Hera walks around owning her power and confidence and skill, people are like, I want that. She doesn't tell people to join the rebellion. They join the rebellion because of the way that she is.
Yes. And Sabine is on her way there.
Yeah.
But Hera is the one who has it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hera's mom. She's mommy.
She's great.
She's the best. All right, Sam, what are we watching next week?
Next week, we're watching Season 2, Episode 9, Stealth Strike, and Season 2, Episode 10, The Future of the Force.
That sounds deeply ominous.
The Future of the Force sounds ominous?
The Future of the Force.
Yeah.
Like the fate of the Force is hanging in the balance, and we have to decide the future.
Or it's like a utopian triptych. You know, it's an R2, it's a Chopper and Zeb mess around episode where we see the beauty of what's to come.
That would be delightful. I did read in the trivia for Blood Sisters that the Gonk Droid was supposed to be C-3PO, and they were supposed to be reuniting 3PO and R2-D2 on Alderaan, and they decided not to because 3PO is just too silly and would have, like, stolen the spotlight from Ketsu and Sabine, which is true.
That is true.
However, it would have been great, and I'm sad we missed it, and I would like another mess around.
It's been a while, but, yeah, I really appreciated the spare dialogue in Blood Sisters. It really fit the vibe of the episode. So we've got two coming up next week. Really excited to watch them. I keep thinking back to my favorite Rebels episodes, and so many of them are in Season 2.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, we haven't even cracked the midpoint yet. That's impressive.
I know. And Wings of the Master is one. I go back, I watch the flight scene, I cry, I move on with my day. So it's
you
great.
Rewatched it last night and you were getting a little misty. I could see it.
I know. So join us next week to watch these next episodes and join us on Patreon for our content that we're doing right now, which is Visions Season 1. We're having a ton of fun there.
Yeah, we should be done with Season 1 by the end of January, and then we're moving straight into Season 2. They are delightful. They are the telenovelas of Star Wars.
Oh, yeah. Some of them are real silly. And then you can always follow us on all of our social media. We're on Instagram, Twitter, Threads, Facebook. You can track us down in real life, and you can play us in Outer Rim, where you can play as Ketsu Onyo.
Oh, my God. I can't believe we didn't talk about that. The board game Star Wars Outer Rim is in my top two, possibly top three favorite board games of all time. You can play as Ketsu Onyo, and she slays. Her special power is that she can zoom around the galaxy murdering starfighters of any persuasion, like mm-hmm. the Hutts, the Pikes, the Imperials, the Rebels, mm-hmm. anyone you can imagine. And they never get mad at her. So all you have to do is fly around murdering everybody with your cool Shadowcaster ship, and then you win the game.
Yep.
She is unstoppable.
She's very fun.
Yeah. So anyway, that would be fun. Come play Outer Rim with us. And the final thing you can do if you love Growing Up Skywalker that really helps us out, if you like what we're doing, drop us 5 stars on Spotify or Apple Podcast, or leave us a review wherever you listen. It just really helps our discoverability, and it helps us get into the earbuds of new listeners.
And we read every review, and we really appreciate all of them. Thank you.
And Sam, who should the people send this episode to?
Send it to your mom.
Okay. Yeah, 'tis the season of moms.
Yeah, yeah. Your mom's like, oh, you left town for Christmas. And you're like, no, wait, I got more to send you. Listen to this podcast. It's great. Send it to your mom.
Do that. And we will talk to you next Tuesday.
Bye-bye.